So Ebola is something that we call a zoonotic pathogen. That means it comes from an animal reservoir, and then, in fact, mammalian or other mammalian species, such as the human. So in this case, we believe Ebola comes from bats, even though there is still some dispute, but that is the general belief. Wherever you find Ebola, it's primarily in those areas where those reservoirs are living. So bats are all over the world, but this is the most diverse group of mammals that we have. So certain bats live in certain areas, and so the reservoirs for Ebola are supposed to be living in Central Africa. So that's why you see these in Africa, and there has to be a transmission from this reservoir into humans or into other animal species such as the great apes. What we're seeing with Ebola is when then one of those patients comes into a healthcare setting that is in bad condition, improperly set up, and then human-to-human transmission occurs. So whatever we see reported as Ebola or as Ebola outbreaks is not the primary transmission event. It is the secondary event or tertiary event when human-to-human transmission occurs. And that is largely driven by improper measurements in healthcare systems. That's why you do not see Ebola primarily, let's say, in the U.S., because at least as far as we know, there is no known reservoir. So if Ebola would have come into the U.S., it would be likely through an infected person. So the fact that you see them in Africa is not just because it's Africa. It's because the reservoir is living in certain parts in Africa.
Dr. Feldman, I'm reading that Minnesota has a relatively large Liberian population. So according to what you're saying, we shouldn't necessarily be so concerned about a visitor from, say, Liberia, bringing this back to Minnesota in this case and wreaking havoc, starting an outbreak here.
Yeah, the history of what we call imported infections has really taught us we have to be cautious and we have to be prepared, but we don't have to be worried about a patient coming into this country. Our healthcare system is so sophisticated in these basic rules that we are much better off than any of these hospitals in developing countries. So if a patient would come with an unknown illness, particularly if it's an infectious or if the cause is most likely infectious, there won't be any nurse in this country that is not going to put gloves on and that is not going to put some protection on, because we have it available, we are set up, they have to follow protocols. And these basic measurements will prevent an outbreak. And if we go back, we didn't have many introductions yet of Ebola, even so, or Marburg, even so we had a few, but we have had quite a few more from Lassa fever, which is causing a similar infectious disease, even though it's a different virus. In all of those cases, and most of them were fatal, we had no secondary cases. So this really shows that what we have established in developing countries, and in this country in particular, is going to protect us for this kind of a scenario. But you are completely right. There is always, not just now, always the possibility that a traveler from an area where this virus has been identified, which we call endemic area, if a traveler comes back, there is always the potential that this person could have picked up that infection. So I think if people are really worried about this, I don't blame them. But I think hopping on an airplane today is a much bigger risk than being afraid of an Ebola patient that comes into a country such as the U.S.
You and your colleagues are working on a vaccine, correct?
That's one of our research areas, yes.
Yeah. In layman terms, that somebody as unsophisticated as I could understand, what can you tell us about it? How close are we?
Our approach, as well as some others from colleagues, we've done all the experimental work. So there are several candidate vaccines that are ready to go into human application, because there's not much more that we can do on the animal side. We're still working on understanding why and how these vaccines are working. So these are more research academic questions, but we have established that these vaccines do work in the animal models. So the next step, and this is where most of the approaches are stuck, is to move this forward do the necessary toxicity and safety tests in phase one clinical trials, which is in humans. It's a small group of humans, the volunteers that are willing to take these vaccines, and where people only look for adverse effects. Is there anything happening? And then the next step would be phase two, which would basically look into the immune responses in humans. Once those two things are done, then we could most likely apply for at least preliminary licensing, and then we could apply them to outbreak situations and use them. These studies are not cheap. The other thing is the money itself is not necessarily the problem. It's more the prioritization on how to spend money in the public health system. Ebola is a very rare disease. The people that have the funding and have the money available, of course, they don't have all the money in the world, and they have to prioritize, and they have to make a decision. Are we going to put this money into developing these vaccines further, or are we going to put this money into HIV, influenza, something else? That is a big burden for our public health system.
From a philosophical, from an ethical perspective, why not bring this unfinished product to West Africa and deploy it right now, going on the argument that something is better than nothing?
The situation in West Africa at the moment, and this is based on my discussion with colleagues in the field and friends in the field, is everybody says that the situation locally is not suitable for any intervention therapy that uses an experimental drug. This may be hard to believe, but these are experts. These are people that are working there, that are people that are trying to help. And if they all warning, I think we need to take that seriously. They have multiple reasons for this. It starts with the terrible conditions in those hospitals and wards. They're totally overfilled. The staff is overworked. They have multiple sites to deal with, which is unusual, which has never happened before. Their personnel is stretched very thin, and they have long hours to work. And then on top of it, the population is very critical and is opposing a lot of the help and assistance. So I think the situation is just not right. On top of it, we need a request from the home country. Without such a request, we can't bring in anything. And that, to my knowledge, has not happened. The third aspect is the legal side. It is, to a certain degree, of course, dangerous to bring in something that has never been in humans. Whoever owns the rights on that vaccine platform or treatment option is, of course, very sensitive to that. There could be legal issues if there is adverse effects associated with the treatment and so on. So there's multiple layers that make this very difficult. It may still not satisfy you and others, but that is currently the situation. And then on top of it is we just don't have enough. This is a very critical situation for West Africa, the countries itself, and the global public health. And I hope, you know, the attention that this gets now and the critical questions being asked, why is no experimental approach being pushed forward, that this will change the prioritization of measurements and that we hopefully will have a vaccine available for the next outbreak or a treatment option. I guess we have to keep our hopes up. A lot of us are frustrated, but we can't give up our hope that hopefully next time we will be prepared and have something.
Dr. Heinz Feldman, thank you so much for your time today and, of course, the important work you and your colleagues in Montana and across the country and the world are doing to tackle these terrible and confounding diseases. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.